Hey guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast. It's your week in review coming up with co-host Anthony DeMarco as we cover everything that happened this week in WWE, including the Big Show getting punted by Orton, MVP capturing the United States Championship, Bayley and Sasha capturing all of the women's gold, the use of Matt Riddle on SmackDown, Grand Metalik becoming the number one contender for AJ Styles Intercontinental Championship, and much more. Everything's going to get started right after this.
If you're a fan of retro wrestling from all eras and love to hear in-depth discussions about professional wrestling, then you need to check out the Main Event Marks. I'm Troy, and along with my co-host Greg, we're lifelong wrestling fans, collectors, and walking wrestling encyclopedias.
The telling fact real quick is the line was huge to me, Christian, and TJ got right in the back of that line, just stood there and...
Hell yeah.
We're not insiders and don't claim to be, but every Wednesday we take a retrospective look at the best, worst, and most humorous moments of professional wrestling's past.
Bro, the Japanese guy is going to pull out a samurai sword and chop off his wiener, bro. But it's going to be funny because he calls it a pee-pee, bro. Like he's five.
You can follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at @MainEvent_Marks, Facebook at facebook.com/MainEventMarksPod, and Main Event Marks is available on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? 'Cause Stone Cold said so.
Hey guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast on this Sunday, July 26th, 2020. Hope everyone's doing well. We're going to roll into this week in WWE in just a minute with co-host Anthony DeMarco, and we've got a lot of things to cover as we talked about at the beginning of the show, including Big E's singles push, how that's going to pan out, our thoughts and hopes about the next few months for Big E, the long-term plan for Big E, which we have very high expectations for, as many do. We talk about, again, Matt Riddle and his use, WWE's use of him over the last several weeks, despite the sexual assault allegations, Grand Metalik winning the number one contendership for the IC title, and really a bunch more stuff. So just you're going to want to stay tuned. As you guys know, Anthony and I have great chemistry. It's always a pleasure to have him on the show, and I think you're going to enjoy this one. So, but before we get there, we do have a voicemail from a listener that has a question, and we're going to get to that right now, and I'll answer it on the other side.
Hey, Matt, I hope everything's going good for you down there, and you're staying safe from all this coronavirus nonsense. I just wanted to talk to you today about factions, because right now I think WWE needs really good faction, because I was actually watching a DVD I have called The Best of Raw 2010, and I saw the Nexus debut there, and they were hot when they debuted. They were on fire, and obviously WWE blew them, and they could have been a huge deal, you know. And you got what's that one, Wade Barrett at the Core. They were okay, but then, you know, the Wyatt family and the Shield. Obviously the Shield is so iconic, right? But they need to get something new, like something fresh. Like, they got the Undisputed Era right now, and they're kind of hit and miss for me. I'm not a huge fan of them, but they need something for the main roster, something threatening. Whenever you hear the music, everybody's scared, you know what I'm saying? And like the Wyatt family, people were like so scared of those guys. And the Shield, they would just dominate everything in their way, and along with the Nexus, just tearing apart the ring on their debut and taking out John Cena and everybody in sight. But yeah, Matt, that's all I really want to say. Get your opinions on that, possibly. And yeah, hope you're staying safe, and well, I'll message you again next time for another question I have. Thanks, dude.
Hey, Curtis. So thanks for the question, as always. And listen, factions in WWE right now are hard to come by. You have tag teams, you have singles competitors, and yeah, you have the New Day, although two out of the three are injured, and one of them's about to go on a big singles run. So factions are a rare breed in WWE, right? And the main purpose of any faction should be, just like any tag team, should be to create stars that eventually go out on their own and have singles careers that are successful. Because that's where the true money is singles wrestling and being a single star, right? But as of late, as you've noted, WWE has not had a lot of factions. Yeah, they had Seth Rollins, and AOP got injured, and then Buddy Murphy mysteriously left, and then came back as Murphy. But I was hopeful at that point that they would build a faction around Seth, and maybe AOP will return. And if he does, great, and where the hell Austin Theory is, I believe he's injured, hopefully he comes back, right? That is a faction that I hope in 2020, 2021, that is like worth seeing, that has value, that is able to build new stars, right? And when you refer to the Nexus, I remember that very well, watching Raw, like, what the hell's going on, like the rest of us? It was an encapsulating TV because we've never seen anything like this. And then WWE didn't know what to do with them, and it was really just seven sacrificial lambs for John Cena. If you remember, John Cena's goal was to take every one of them out one by one, ending with Wade Barrett. I believe he literally got buried on a pile of chairs before he became Bad News Barrett. And I'm with you. Then there was the core, which was just a bad offspring of the Nexus. But I don't believe there was ever really a true plan for the Nexus, which was why I think it ultimately felt like a flop. Because not a lot of big stars came out of that faction. Yeah, you had Michael McGillicuddy, right, as Curtis Axel. You had Bray Wyatt, believe it or not, come out of that. But he wasn't born there. He was under a much different persona at the time, of course. You had Daniel Bryan, but he wasn't Daniel Bryan as we know him now. So while he came up with that, he actually got fired for choking out, I believe it was Justin Roberts on the outside of the ring. So we've had big names come out of it, but not on purpose. It was kind of just by accident that we had big stars come out of there. And Wade Barrett was clearly the leader and the best star, biggest star in that group. Yeah, you had Heath Slater, right? You had Heath Slater come out of there, but I mean, his career was... it's been a bit underwhelming as well. So Wade Barrett, I think, was a miscalculation or a misfiring from WWE. What I mean by that is I don't think they used him in the right way. I think he could have been even bigger than he was. I think he's one of the best talkers that pro wrestling had at that time, especially, or really even in the modern era. So I hope they build a faction again. Factions are needed. They're needed for... To build even not just the stars in that group, but the stars that they're working with. Because whether they're heel or their face, most factions are heel. They will run roughshod for a while until baby faces stand up, which builds new stars. So yeah, factions, I don't want them all the time, but it's been so long since there's been a true real faction. And what I mean by that, a faction to me I define as three or more. Right? Three or more. And... we had the Shield that had its run. They instilled fear for quite a while. You said the Wyatt family. They instilled fear for quite a while. It's been some time since we've been like, oh my God, right? And Seth's group started to follow that same path and then got cut short amid injuries and the coronavirus. So I hope, just as you do, that we see factions in late 20, again, into 2021, as we all really anxiously await 2020 to just leave us all. But yeah, factions are absolutely a necessary part of wrestling. They just are. Yeah, they have the Undisputed Era. I get it. And like you said, I understand that. And they're in their own right very successful in NXT, right? But WWE main roster, so to speak, still needs its own big, mean faction. But how do you do it around Baron Corbin, right? Seth Rollins is certainly a candidate. AJ Styles could be a candidate. There are heels there that have potential to build that next star or stars. It's just a matter of pulling the trigger. Do I think it's going to happen, though? I don't know. WWE has not shown much evidence of it. Again, other than Seth. So we'll see. But thanks, Curtis, for the question. Alrighty. Well, guys, before we get to this, my conversation with Anthony DeMarco, I want to remind you, if you want to send your voicemail to the show, you can do so at realwwepodcast@gmail.com, or you can send it to me via a normal voicemail. How do you do that? You call this number. And no, don't worry. I've said this before. This is not a manned voice, phone number, rather. Nobody's going to pick up. It's not going to be awkward. Like, hello, who's this? Right? No. It's a unmanned voice message setup. It's 518-952-0247. 518-952-0247. That will get you into my voicemail. You can leave it there. If you have a question, comment, want to get on the show like Curtis did, feel free. I would love new voices and old voices as well. So, with that said, guys, also on WWEpodcast.com, we've started to do some new things. I've changed the layout a little bit. I've added a section called WWE News, where we're going to start trying to report on news that's happening in the world of wrestling, and giving credit where credit is due, right? We're going to credit any sources that we find. But we also have a new columnist, and he recently has joined the team. And his name is Cody Churchill. So welcome him to the team. And you can check out his very first column right now on WWEpodcast.com. And he wrote about how has the men's division actually been taken over? Has it really been conquered now by the women's division? He wrote a really good piece on that. So if you're looking at really the women's evolution and its success when it parallels to the men's and where it really stands when it's compared to the men's division, it's a great column. So check it out. Cody is our one of our latest columnists that will be contributing every once in a while to the show. And I also invite anybody else who is interested in becoming a news contributor to the website or becoming a columnist to the website, hit me up at realwwepodcast@gmail.com because there are still some slots open. We're looking to drive really more traffic to the site. As we know, podcasts are good for websites, but most people use their apps and phones. You don't go to a website to listen to a podcast. So we want to transform that and be able to really provide more news, more reading material, and eventually more video. So that's really the vision of the podcast or of the website, rather. So if you're interested, hit me up at realwwepodcast@gmail.com, or you can hit me up on Instagram at WWE_podcast and DM me there. That's WWE_podcast on Instagram. So, all right, with all that said, guys, let's get into it. I'll be back on Tuesday with your Raw review. But right now, it's time to enjoy Anthony DeMarco and myself as we break down this week in WWE. Until then, guys, I'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys, it's your week in review. I've got Anthony DeMarco here with me tonight to discuss everything that happened here as this week closes out on July 26th, or actually kind of the week beginning. If you are a Sunday person, believer that Sunday is the beginning of the week, I guess calendar-wise it is, but in WWE land, it is actually the end of the week, if you will. So, Anthony, welcome back. Hope everything's doing good for you. And we're almost into August and SummerSlam season now.
It's crazy, man. Good to be back. And it is so crazy to me that we're already at SummerSlam. It felt like yesterday that Drew McIntyre was dethroning Brock at WrestleMania. But here we are, and here's hoping to a memorable SummerSlam.
I really hope so. It feels just kind of like another one bites the dust, right? With this COVID era claiming yet another pay-per-view when it was supposed to be in Boston this year. It's hard when you go pay-per-view by pay-per-view, like, oh, I wish this was in front of an audience. I personally don't think that it's going to be on a full scale until this the whole vaccine comes out and it's widely distributed. That's my guess. So we could be looking at maybe Royal Rumble time, hopefully in time for WrestleMania. I can't deal with another empty arena or empty performance center or the WWE drone fans that are there environment. I need a real crowd. So let's hope that happens. But yeah, it's SummerSlam season, and we have a lot to discuss this week. Certainly SmackDown to me was the breadwinner, if you will, of the news week, because to me, now I know we had the bar fight and we're going to get to that, but I think the biggest news coming out of SmackDown, believe it or not, in my estimation, is WWE proclaiming that Big E is now getting a singles run. And Kofi Kingston and Big E, I think, pulled it off very nicely. They're saying that Xavier Woods is out and that Kofi Kingston is going to be out for 6 weeks. And that, you know, Big E was telling Kofi, or Kofi Kingston was telling Big E, listen, you know, this is your time, man. You've been selfish. You've been here. You've paid your dues. And he was reluctant at first, kind of being the humble team player, and then eventually kind of gave into it. And I hope that when this happens, or it is happening, that they take away the silly gyrating, dancing, pancake throwing, just all that nonsense needs to go away. We've seen that version of him for like 6-7 years now. I'm done with it. You're done with it, as we know. I just hope they take it seriously. Maybe they change his music. Not a complete change in character, but get serious, man. That's what I'm hoping for Big E. I'm actually really excited for Big E, to be honest. So what do you think about that news about Big E?
Well, look, I think first off, Big E has the most potential out of all of the members of the New Day in terms of a singles push, and he always has, based on just his athleticism, how big he is, his appearance. He clearly has a character, like he blossomed during the New Day. So I'm really excited to see this. And to be honest, maybe it's just like a lingering hangover from when he was champion, but I really just cannot deal with Kofi Kingston anymore. Like, I just despise everything about his character. So him going away is making me happy just as is, but knowing that now Big E's going to get a chance for a singles push is even more exciting, because let's take a look back at how he came in. You know, he entered WWE as a heavy for Dolph Ziggler when Dolph Ziggler was had the Money in the Bank briefcase, I believe in 2012 or 2013, and he was pretty much just like a silent monster. He broke away from Dolph. He had a brief stint with the Intercontinental Championship, but his character never really gravitated towards fans, or fans never gravitated towards his character, I may add. But since he got in the New Day, he really blossomed, and he showed that he was more than just a big meathead. He had a character. He's funny as hell. He has as much charisma as arguably anyone in WWE right now. But for the last, I would say maybe 3-4 years, he's just been caught in this never-ending redundant gimmick that is the New Day. And look, I'll be honest, I really like Big E and Xavier Woods, and if it's just them two, I can get by with the New Day, just not to the extent that WWE pushes them. It's mainly Kofi that I guess it's just the lingering feelings, like I said, about his championship run. But with Xavier not there, and it is just Kofi front and center with Big E all the time, I cannot stress enough how happy I am that now Big E will get his own run, hopefully something unique. Like you just said, change his music, change his gimmick somehow. Like, don't forget what he was with the New Day, because, you know, from all reports, you know, Kofi will be back in September around then. So it's not like he's going away for a long time like Xavier Woods. So you can't completely abandon the New Day character that Big E has. But I'm really curious to see how they utilize him, what kind of character he's going to have, what kind of gimmick he's going to have, and if even once Kofi and or Xavier return, they're going to keep him in a singles push.
There's no doubt that distancing himself from Kofi Kingston will benefit Big E in a big way, because, like you said, it is interesting. Like, we have really torn down the New Day many times on this show, but if you were going to pinpoint the person on that team, in that faction, that is the culprit, is kind of like the soul of what makes the New Day awful, it is Kofi Kingston. The whole thing is Kofi Kingston, because, like you said, Xavier is a guy that is actually entertaining. He's made me laugh many times. He doesn't have that go away heat. Big E is the muscle, and you know deep down there's more to him. You know deep down that there's something there that needs to be brought out beyond this silly group. And when you look at Kofi, I don't want to go into that whole thing. You and I have. But yes, he embodies everything that is awful about the New Day. Like, he is just what is awful about New Day. I'm not disparaging his talent. He's certainly a veteran in the ring. He's extremely talented, all that. But he is exactly what he needs to distance himself from. He is the epitome of the awfulness of the New Day. And Big E, hopefully in these 6 weeks, he can really make some progress to really distinguishing himself and distancing himself from that silly gimmick. Because when Kofi comes back, 6 weeks is not a long time. And I don't think Big E's going to become WWE Universal Champion of that by that point. But he needs to make a complete like line in the sand, like draw a line. This is my character now. I'm not going back to the New Day. I hope that he doesn't regress back to the New Day when this 6 weeks is up, because that's not a very long time at all. It's a month and a half. Leads you just past SummerSlam. So I think Big E, honestly, will be on a path to the WWE Universal Championship. I believe that's where they're headed. I don't know the timeline of it, but I think that you'll see that progress over the next few months. It won't be a direct path. It'll probably have some detours. Maybe he'll challenge for the Intercontinental Championship. AJ Styles certainly needs people to work with. I know he's got Grand Metalik, and we can talk about that later too. But a serious challenger in a time that certainly lacks depth on the babyface roster, you have Big E sitting there waiting, salivating to come out and be able to latch onto something and have the fans, I think, are going organically. If there was a crowd there, I think the fans would love to see this. And again, I do not want to get political on the show, but it's hard to ignore the Black Lives Movement timing of this. I don't think it's WWE reacting to the Black Lives Movement, but at the same time, I think it's because Big E has earned this, whether that was happening or not. But it's certainly good timing because it's a great look for the company. So it's kind of a win-win. They probably were going to do this anyway, but it's also kind of like if you were going to be a super pessimist or look at the company negatively, you could say, hey, well, I don't know. Like, this is a little suspicious. The thing is, this movement for Big E happened well before any of this nonsense in the world was happening. So I think that, hey, this is great timing for the company. It's also deserving for Big E. So, again, we're not getting political, but at the same time, it's kind of a win-win in terms of timing.
Well, as you just mentioned, the path is there for Big E to take to be a relevant babyface on the SmackDown roster. Because, like you just said, you know, AJ Styles going up against Grand Metalik. Look, I'm sure it's going to be a good match, but I watched that, and in my head, I was just like, what's the point of this? Like, does anyone think that this guy has a chance? So then you look beyond that, and, you know, Daniel Bryan clearly is away right now due to COVID-related reasons, and I believe Brie is about to have their second child. Now, Braun is obviously the champion, and or maybe he's drowned right now. We could get into that maybe a bit later. You have Jeff Hardy you can make the case for. Matt Riddle slowly starting to get his toes, his feet wet in WWE. You know, they've done away with Shorty G, like, completely. So, like you just said, there is a big need for singles babyface wrestlers on the SmackDown roster. And I could see him going up against AJ Styles for the Intercontinental Championship as soon as SummerSlam. Like, why not? Who else could possibly go up against AJ Styles? Drew Gulak, I guess, but we saw that. They had a couple matches. Matt Riddle, well, they were hinting towards that, but now he's clearly engaged with a feud with Baron Corbin. You know, Daniel Bryan isn't anywhere to be seen. Jeff Hardy, sure, maybe now he's at the end of his feud with Sheamus, but I don't think that he's going to get into a title like program right now. So Big E, it's really there for the taking for this guy, and it may just be a case of the stars aligning for him to have a solid run as a singles wrestler, and hopefully they can make it more of a long-term thing.
I think it's got to be long-term. I don't see why they wouldn't. This is a proven, reliable guy in a group, in one of the most successful groups, whether you and I like the group or not. We can't deny this financial success, at times rating draw, and the at times entertainment value. Again, a very subjective, unique aspect of the group, but he's a proven commodity over many years, and he's proven durable. He hasn't been injured that often. He is a guy that you just are like, why aren't they pushing? We have said it over the years here, and many other podcasts and many other wrestling fans have said the same thing. Like, what is going on with Big E? They finally recognize it. The timing is right. It's the COVID era, and there's no better time to experiment and to do things that maybe you normally wouldn't have else done. I mean, I wonder if COVID never happened, would Big E have been given this opportunity? I don't know. I'm guessing it probably would have happened, but maybe not this soon, because the COVID era has allowed things to happen that may not have happened, or may not have happened this quickly. So Big E, I'm sure, is excited. I would be too. I hope creative has a long-term plan. Like you said, that's the key for Big E. Give us a long-term plan. Don't hotshot this from week to week. Give us destinations. What is his first step? What's his second step? What's his third step, right? Like, go to the destination and work your way back, just like how you write a book. And I hope that that ultimate goal is to, in fact, make him Universal Champion, or maybe WWE Champion at some point if he ever transfers over to the Raw brand. But if he stays on SmackDown, yeah, make him Universal Champion. Like, how do we get there, though, right? Like, where does that happen? Like you said, though, I don't see anybody else that faces Big E or faces AJ Styles at SummerSlam for the Intercontinental title other than Big E. It seems to be a pretty obvious choice, but a great choice. I'm not saying that just because it seems obvious it shouldn't happen. I think Big E could maybe even dethrone AJ Styles at SummerSlam. Again, a match that hasn't even been announced, but certainly one that I think it would send the right message to fans that, hey, we're listening. We're on board with you, and we're taking this seriously. The Intercontinental Championship could be a great championship for him to have for many months, and to really build that good faith with fans of not just holding it and losing it in a month, but holding it and keeping it for many months. And maybe when he drops it, he can get himself into the Universal Championship picture. So any final closing thoughts on Big E and where they could be going?
Nothing more than to just kind of piggyback on what we just said, that across both brands right now, there is a true lack of legitimate babyface single stars. Like, okay, obviously Braun Strowman and Drew McIntyre are the respective world champions on each brand. But beyond that, like, look at even the Raw side, like the U.S. title picture, the mid-card scene, you had Rey Mysterio, who knows if he'll be back. You had Apollo Crews, who hasn't been around. Kevin Owens, for sure. I love Kevin Owens, but his appearances have been very inconsistent for the last several months during the COVID era. Edge, he's out with injury. And then you look on the SmackDown brand, you know, after Braun Strowman, you know, Roman Reigns hasn't been seen since March. Daniel Bryan seems to be more times than not away from the wrestling ring. Drew Gulak and Shorty G, yeah, sure, they're okay, but I don't think they're legitimate, you know, contenders for the IC title at this very moment. Matt Riddle, I'm sure that they're high on him, but again, he's not anywhere close to being a legitimate singles wrestler, like upper in the card just yet. So if there's any time for Big E to take advantage of it, it's right now.
No, there isn't. This is, you talk about timing, and everything in this life is timing. This is right now. This is barring an injury, you know, an unforeseen, you know, God willing injury, or God forbid injury. I don't think that there's much stopping Big E right now. Like, and I'm interested to hear his promos and when he's serious. That's what I'm most interested in. I'm interested to see him not in like pink and blue tights, maybe in some traditional wrestling gear or something else. And again, yeah, music. Change your music to identify that. Hey, yeah, I'm not running from who I was. We're not forgetting that he was a part of the New Day. But it's time to evolve, and that's what I want. I want a distinction from this old character. That, yeah, it's a part of me. We've been there, but it's time to move on. Like, that's what I want, and I hope next week on SmackDown we kind of get that hint, that declaration from Big E. Next week, Kofi won't be there. Next week, Xavier won't be there. It is solely Big E, and I want that mission statement. I want that official, hey, like, I'm here. This is my mission. Here's where I want to go. And be serious and see how he can do in a real serious environment. I don't need him all serious all the time. He can certainly make jokes. He's shown a sense of humor for 6 years now. But all right, well, I'm excited for Big E, and as you are, and probably most of the WWE fans. So, but you mentioned Matt Riddle, and I guess that's a transition into what they've been doing with him. Obviously, I mean, I believe we've talked about it with his sexual assault allegations that have been kind of forgotten in a way. I mean, at least there's been no new evidence coming out, and WWE seems full steam ahead with the bro that runs the show. And he had a great match with AJ Styles, and he continues to now be in a program with Baron Corbin. And he is, I mean, if anybody hasn't seen Matt Riddle before, you are now seeing what most people saw in NXT, that this guy is seriously has some of the best cardio you've ever seen. I mean, like, he came out of that match and was barely breathing hard after doing some crazy moves for like 10, 12 minutes. And he shows you he's got that charisma. His promos aren't A+. That's probably the hardest part of this whole deal, being a professional wrestler, but I think that'll come. And now he's in a program with Baron Corbin. What are you thinking of, number one, how they've dealt with Matt Riddle so far, and the inevitable program that he is in with Baron Corbin? Where does that end?
Well, look, they are clearly high on him, and for good reason. In the ring, like you mentioned, it's like this guy doesn't even break a sweat. I like that he has kind of, well, he has a jiu-jitsu background or black belt background of some capacity. I'm not really sure what it is, but something of that in that realm. And he's good in the ring. He has charisma. I'm kind of having a hard time with him as a babyface. I dislike him, but not in like a bad way. Like, I just want him to go away. But in the sense that, like, I feel like I should be hating this guy. Like, I want to see him get his ass kicked in a way. So I'm not really connecting with him as a babyface. Like, I find his music very irritating. The bro thing, I find it extremely annoying. Like, he just looks like a guy that coming out of the beach with a surfboard that you just want to see get attacked by a shark or something, you know? Like, maybe not to that capacity, but that's kind of like how I see him. So, like, maybe in time I'll view him better as a babyface, but he just kind of screams heel. But I think most important, what I like about this is that he's a legitimate dancing partner for King Corbin, who I find has just been floating in obscurity for far too long right now. And if he can just give King Corbin a non-obscure program to be in, where he's not just perpetually talking trash and getting his ass beat less than 2 hours later on the same show, I'm here for it. Like I said, the character itself, I think I could... there's room for me to grow in terms of connecting with him, mainly just because of him being a babyface. But I like the fact that A, really good in the ring, B, WWE is committed to him, and C, he's giving Baron Corbin something legitimate to do.
You're listening to the WWE Podcast. We'll be right back after this short break.
If you're a fan of retro wrestling from all eras and love to hear in-depth discussions about professional wrestling, then you need to check out The Main Event Marks. I'm Troy, and along with my co-host Greg, we're lifelong wrestling fans, collectors, and walking wrestling encyclopedias.
The telling fact real quick is the line was huge to me, Christian, and TJ got right in the back of that line, just stood there and...
Hell yeah.
We're not insiders and don't claim to be, but every Wednesday we take a retrospective look at the best, worst, and most humorous moments of professional wrestling's past.
Bro, the Japanese guy's gonna pull out a samurai sword and chop off his wiener, bro. But it's gonna be funny because he calls it a pee-pee, bro. Like he's five.
You can follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at @MainEvent_Marks, Facebook at facebook.com/MainEvent Marks Pod, and Main Event Marks is available on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to the WWE Podcast. Let's get back to more great wrestling audio.
He is, and it's weird to say that Baron Corbin needs him more than Matt Riddle needs Baron Corbin, given how long that Baron Corbin's been on the, quote, main roster. But Riddle already feels like a star. And even if you've never seen him in NXT, he already feels like he's a big deal. And that says a lot, because not that doesn't always happen. You know, when these NXT call-ups happen, there's usually an adjustment period. And maybe I'm perceiving this differently than most, but he feels already like he's a big deal. And I'm with you on the whole, he is really screaming to be a heel, and WWE is playing him as a babyface. But at the same time, I'm willing to let that go for now, to see it play out, to see if I, like you said, somehow connect with him. And I'm not feeling like he's kind of like the D-bag frat boy that comes out, and he's the guy that is obnoxious and loud, and he somehow has a really hot girlfriend, and you're wondering how, because he's a total D-bag. And, you know, he just feels like that guy, like you said, the surfer guy that isn't too bright, but is super athletic. Like he does give off that vibe, and I don't connect with that. Like I do. There is a part of me that does that wants to see somebody beat him down, but they're presenting him in a way that is also kind of counter to that, where he seems like the kind of cool, laid back guy that is super athletic. So you respect that right off the bat. He's put on good matches so far, so it's hard to hate that. So it feels like they're kind of swimming upstream right now, and maybe all of that work will be worth it. But the positioning of his character does just, man, it's screaming like, just turn this guy heel. It kind of feels like with Lacey Evans, and we'll get to that in a minute too, where I never really bought into her babyface turn because she was still doing the nasty stuff. Her outfit didn't change. Her music didn't change. All we knew all we figured out was, oh, she's a military person and she loves her kid. Well, you know, we'll get to that. But yeah, I do feel like Matt Riddle has a really strong and really bright future on SmackDown. This King Corbin thing, I think, is going to lead to SummerSlam. That seems to be the case, given the timing and how far away. We're, what, 4 weeks away from SummerSlam now or so? And if it's SummerSlam, King Corbin versus Matt Riddle, that's fine. Totally fine. And again, it's to advance Matt Riddle's career. The focus here is on Matt Riddle, not King Corbin. At the same time, you and I have said King Corbin has been really mismanaged and misused for really a long time now, since him and Roman Reigns had that, you know, 13-month program, or however long it felt. It was just an infinite program that never ended. And I think that did a lot of damage for Corbin, who, you know, lost that whole thing. And he never has really recovered. They never have given him momentum. They haven't done a whole lot. And I feel for Corbin, because Corbin has so much potential. He's got a really good promo. He just has no cronies to maybe back him up. And his king gimmick needs a little bit more depth, other than calling people subjects and, you know, I have a kingdom. All the usual, like, verbiage that a fake king uses. He needs something else, and I don't know what that is. But I feel for Corbin, who's been stomped on far too long on SmackDown.
You know, I remember when King Corbin came up originally, back then Baron Corbin, in 2016, and he was drafted to SmackDown as part of the reincarnation of the brand split, when Shane was in charge of SmackDown and Stephanie was in charge of Raw. And I was really high on this guy. I liked him right away. He had different music back then. He kind of had like a motorcycle gimmick going on. He had the long hair. And then in 2017, he won the Money in the Bank briefcase. Then just based on hearsay, I heard that he pissed someone off backstage. Obviously, he had the failed attempt on Jinder Mahal. And it really seemed like they were going to do away with him. Then he goes to Monday Night Raw the following year. He becomes the Constable, has the ongoing feud with Kurt Angle, who he eventually retired. And he had a pretty memorable run on Monday Night Raw. You know, he had the whole alliance with Drew and Bobby Lashley, went up against The Shield, had a bit of an ongoing run with Braun Strowman as well. And then he went up against Roman Reigns for, what, 4 months, which it grew stale after a while. And I'm not saying it didn't, but there was, you know, the first couple months there were entertaining. But now we've gotten to a point where I feel almost as if he's a heel in a world ruled by heels right now. And even on SmackDown, like, Bray Wyatt is obviously the top heel. Then you have AJ Styles. And it just seems like there's no real dancing partner for him in any program that would be meaningful of any sort. You know, like we just said, like, it's hard enough trying to find dancing partners for AJ Styles. Like, for God's sakes, he's going up against Grand Metalik next week. But then you get Matt Riddle, who isn't quite ready for that. So then he's kind of a perfect dancing partner for Baron Corbin. But at the same time, you kind of have to assume that Matt Riddle is going to be the one to come out on top in the long run. So if that's the case, what's the end game with Corbin here? And it just seems like he's constantly in this never-ending cycle of he's irrelevant, irrelevant, irrelevant. Then they invest him like really hard into like a long-term program with a legitimate star. And to your point, even though he's new, Matt Riddle already seems legitimate. Roman Reigns was legitimate. Kurt Angle was legitimate. So they clearly have faith in Baron Corbin to keep putting him into all these feuds. But at the end of the day, more times than not, he comes in on the losing end of it, aside from his WrestleMania match with Kurt Angle that pretty much led to nothing. But even if he does come out with it, nothing, he just gets lost in obscurity afterwards. And he just seems like a guy that I personally thought, because I was behind him right away, that he could have been a Universal / WWE champion. And all he has to show for his WWE career here in, what, going on 4 years now, we're into his fifth year on the main roster, is one U.S. title run, a failed cash-in attempt, and winning the King of the Ring tournament. And I just think it's kind of a shame because you don't really see an end game for him. And that's the thing that is most puzzling to me, is that you have all these heel characters who, for the most part, WWE has done a masterful job of building up in the last few months. Like, AJ Styles been great as a heel. Seth Rollins, great as a heel. Randy Orton on arguably the best run of his entire career right now. But then you get King Corbin, who, while he's a good heel, and we've said before, he almost has a JBL-esque vibe to him as a heel, there's just no end game, and it almost seems like at the end of the day, he's just a guy to put over baby faces.
He is he's a perpetual sacrificial lamb for baby faces. That's exactly what he's been. And WWE is using him as a constant just stepping stone for baby faces instead of realizing, hey, how you build baby faces isn't necessarily by beating mediocre heels, as is positioned by Baron Corbin, but rather like beating heels that are truly hated and that have a ton of heat. And with Baron Corbin, he has almost no heat. Other than when he comes out, people will boo him because he's, you know, his voice is annoying and he's good at pissing off people. He has that talent. And WWE just refuses to build heat. I mean, Baron Corbin, WWE can't even not blow off the heat in the same show. Like, more often than not, Baron Corbin will be the butt of a joke at the end of the day. And he'll run his mouth at the beginning of the show, and then he'll end up on his back looking up at the lights at the end of the show. They can't or just won't build a heel, and I don't think creative understands the true meaning of building a real heel. And yes, we have Randy Orton, who we'll definitely get to that for sure, that is doing just a brilliant job, I think, in spite of creative, because he understands what it means to build true heat. But creative needs to do their job in allowing the heat to be built, because that's how you build baby faces. Like, that is how you truly build baby faces, is through heels. It seems like it's reverse psychology, but it's not. You want someone to stand up to the person you hate. You live vicariously through that person. It's simple human psychology. And if Baron Corbin doesn't have a whole lot of hate and it's just kind of mediocre or indifference, that's the kiss of death. If people look at Baron Corbin and go, eh, that's the last thing you want. You want a strong emotion one way or the other. And Baron Corbin, as good as he is being used as just this guy that is a stepping stone for the next baby face that they're bringing up. And that's not what Baron Corbin should be. He should have a stable behind him. For all this kingdom stuff and all this subject talk and all this, you know, carrying a scepter and all this, he should have, you know, cronies with him to take the heat while he does, you know, while they do his dirty work, and then he comes in to, you know, take the pickings, right? And that's not what's happening. It's just WWE they can't even own the angle win. Why is he not bringing this up more often? It would be the equivalent of Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman forgetting to bring up that they ended The Undertaker's WrestleMania streak. They did for a long time, although that's been kind of forgotten in promos. The fact is that why are you not really just selling and drilling into fans' minds that, oh yeah, he beat Kurt Angle in his retirement match, that SOB. I mean, instead it's forgotten. How is Kurt Angle's retirement match forgotten? And maybe it's because everyone wanted John Cena versus Kurt Angle, so they don't even want to remember that match even occurred. I don't know. But I guess to close out my thoughts, they need to do a whole lot with Baron Corbin, because that's how you build baby faces, is through hot heels. So that's all I have.
Yeah, it just seems that after really good work they did with him at the beginning of his career, and you know what, as you just mentioned, as early as last year at Mania, they've done almost the same amount of work to delegitimize his character. And that's how I see him now, is that there's nothing really legitimate to take his character seriously. And like I said, you know, you're in year five now on the main roster, and your biggest claim to fame is a U.S. title run 3 years ago. You know, it's a damn shame for me. I believe he won the Andre Memorial Battle Royal in 2016 as well. Like, obviously, the King of the Ring thing is nice. Obviously, the program with Angle that he ended up retiring is nice. He had, the last ever feud with the Shield, which will always be remembered. But at the end of the day, I think that there's more for this guy. And obviously, right now, he's behind, let's say, AJ Styles and Bray Wyatt on the totem pole of SmackDown heels. And even if he took on the Raw side, he would probably be fourth in the pecking order or third behind Randy Orton and Seth Rollins for sure, and maybe even Bobby Lashley. But there's just something more for this guy, and maybe it doesn't even have to be in a title feud. Maybe it could be in a non-title feud like he did with Roman Reigns. And I gotta say, if they didn't drag that thing on so damn long, I enjoyed his feud with Roman Reigns for the most part. Because, you know, for a big guy, Baron Corbin can really move in the ring. I love his finisher. I love his skill set. I think he's good at selling as well. But there's just something about his character that lacks legitimacy, and it's not his fault. That lies on creative.
Yeah, it does. And maybe, you know what, maybe he just drops the whole King thing and just becomes a darker version of himself. I don't know, because the King character has been now defined down to a point where it's a butt of a joke. It's not being taken seriously. So if you're not being taken seriously as a heel, you can't ever get over. I mean, you just can't as a top heel. So maybe he drops it. I don't know. I mean, I think they tried to mirror the success that King Booker had, going from his, you know, character to King Booker, which was lightning in a bottle and Charmel and all that was brilliant. And now it's not in the fault of King Corbin. It's simply on the shoulders of creative, because Baron Corbin is executing his lines great. He seems all in. He's invested. But it's creative, I believe, that's holding him back from really being able to open this thing up. So I would either drop the damn character and go to a dark version of evil version of himself, or if you're going to do this, make him have show a mean streak. And what's his biggest mean streak? Throwing dog food on Roman Reigns? Like, oh boy. Like, I mean, so yeah, they need to clean this character up, and because they are really sitting and start pissing away Baron Corbin week after week, and it's a shame. The thing is, too, though, they use him a lot, but they don't use him in the right way. So they see the value in him, but only to a certain level. That's the problem. So, okay, moving on, though, I do want to touch on one or two more things on SmackDown, and then we'll get to the big ticket items on Raw. Grand Metalik is now the number one contender for the Intercontinental Championship. I actually thought it was going to be Drew Gulak. I did buy into that. I know that it's kind of a red herring, and it was supposed to be there as a distraction, because certainly I don't think anybody from the Lucha House Party was going to win that Fatal 4-Way match. A great match, by the way. But look, I'm not saying that's a wrong choice. It's certainly a new matchup. Grand Metalik is ultra-talented. We saw what he can do. He's been stuck in this really go-nowhere, laughable group that Vince does when he doesn't know what to do with a bunch of people. He sticks him in. He sticks people the same heritage, nationality, in the same group, and then gives them really a meaningless title or a meaningless direction. So Grand Metalik, I'm cool with it. Like, do I think he's going to win? Of course not. It's not about him winning, but it's about at least him, WWE, showcasing a new talent and giving us a new matchup, which is always a good thing. So what did you think about Grand Metalik winning the Fatal 4-Way to face AJ Styles?
You know, I think this was the only negative part of SmackDown, and I'll tell you why. Because the match itself was really good. There are four guys in the ring who know what they're doing, some really good spots, high-flying action, good technical moves brought to you by Drew Gulak, who has really impressed me lately, and I'm happy to see that they're not letting him just like waste away in the wind in the absence of Daniel Bryan. So there's nothing to say negative about the match itself, but what the hell did the guys from Lucha House Party, and Shorty G for that matter, do to deserve this type of match? And I just find that there's no congruity anymore to, you know, make sense of these storylines. Like, back in the day, and I don't want to sound like a dinosaur, but if you were in a match to go up against the Intercontinental Champion, which is supposed to be a big deal, arguably the second most prestigious title in WWE ahead of the Universal Championship, you would have had to be on some kind of winning streak. Has Grand Metalik had a singles match ever in WWE? Like, I'm being serious. I don't know if he's ever had a one-on-one match since coming up to the main roster. And even going with the other guys, like, Drew Gulak has had his chance at the Intercontinental Championship and failed. Shorty G, you know, what the hell has he done really of late? Nothing really in the terms of winning. And the Lucha House Party, last time I saw them, they lost a fatal four-way match for the tag team titles. Like, why are these four going up against AJ Styles for the Intercontinental Championship? And again, why is it happening on SmackDown next week? WWE right now is on this kind of path that they constantly have a title up for grabs on every Raw and or SmackDown. And you know what? It's the COVID era. The ratings are down. They need a hook to draw people in. I get it. I like it. And there's something it is to be said about titles changing hands on non-pay-per-view events. You know, when Roman Reigns beat Sheamus for it in December 2015, that was a big deal. Or when tag team titles get change hands, you know, I'm not against it. But if you're going to do something like that, it has to make sense. And this doesn't make sense. Like, instead of building AJ Styles in a meaningful program towards SummerSlam, now you just have him in this meaningless pit stop against Grand Metalik, which we know he's not going to lose the belt to Grand Metalik, and I'm sure it's going to be a great match. We saw what Grand Metalik could do, and you can make the argument that there's no better in-ring wrestler right now than AJ Styles in WWE. So that's not the issue here. But it's saying, like, if Grand Metalik can get an Intercontinental Championship opportunity, then you're pretty much saying that anyone on the roster can get a chance for the Intercontinental Championship. Like, my grandma could go in there and in a couple months she'll get a chance for it. You know what I mean? And I'm not trying to devalue or tear down Grand Metalik as a character or the other member of Lucha House Party for that matter, but it's just like, the titles are supposed to mean something. They're supposed to have an importance. And that's why I like that they put AJ Styles as the Intercontinental Championship to bring it back up, because I found ever since The Miz went away from it, it started going back into obscurity. But then you have matches like this when you just throw together four undeserving guys. Well, I guess you can make the case for Drew Gulak because he's been doing well as of late. But, like, you know, instead of this kind of match, why didn't you have AJ Styles come out and cut a promo on Kofi Kingston, you know, endorsing Big E, and then start a long-term program building to to SummerSlam from there? Or instead of having a bar fight, why didn't you have Sheamus versus Jeff Hardy in a match to determine the Intercontinental one contender? You know, something like that. It's just, it's not the match itself that bothers me. I'm not trying to tear down Grand Metalik, but to me, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense that he won the match, and it doesn't make sense that he was even in the match to become number one contender.
So that's funny you bring that up, because AJ Styles brought that up. At the beginning of the match, he actually said on commentary, you know, I don't understand. This is ridiculous. What did these four guys ever do to deserve a shot at the number one contendership? And I'm thinking to myself, yeah. Like, what did they do? Like, were we ever told why these guys are getting a free pass to a number one contendership? Like, I mean, AJ Styles had to just go through a grueling, you know, 8-week tournament basically to capture the Intercontinental Championship. And in a single swoop, you get four guys just picked out of a hat to have the opportunity to become number one contender. I can't tell you how much that kind of stuff in WWE gets under my skin. And like you said, it's not the match. It's not the performers. It's just the simple miscalculation or overlook or not caring of the detail that of, hey, how did these guys even earn this? I mean, that's just basic storytelling. The number one thing, too, that annoys me with the Vince McMahon version of what babyface champions should be. They're always fighting champions. I'll fight anybody anytime for this championship. I would argue against that. Why? you're devaluing the championship by saying that anyone at any time can face me and I will put my title on the line. Why? Right? Like, this championship you fought your entire life, presumably, to get. Why would you put it on the line against anybody? Well, they're showing you they're not going to back down from a fight. But you're also devaluing the championship because you're saying anyone could come at any time and challenge me for this, which devalues the belt that is supposed to be super important to you. To me, it is just a constant, really just a stereotypical babyface just declaration every single time. Drew McIntyre's promo was guilty of it. Braun Strowman, I believe, was too. That anybody at any time, why? Right? So, I mean, I guess that's a different conversation, but that really annoys me. But with AJ Styles, he was exactly right. He's on commentary, and I'm thinking, wow, I'm surprised they even let that in here. Because that's really a slight at creative. That's not a slight in like a pro wrestling type of way. It's kind of like, yeah, we weren't ever told why these four guys are even here, deservingly apparently here. I'm with you that certainly this makes no sense, but I'm not sad about or angry about the outcome, just how the hell we got here.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because it's not for a lack of talent. And look, I know they're both heels, so I get why they can't put them in a heel versus heel type of program with AJ Styles. But the fact that you have Grand Metalik and Shorty G and Lince Dorado, that's the other guy's name, in this match, and then you have The Miz and John Morrison basically feuding with Naomi and being hosts to give Naomi and Lacey Evans a platform to promote their feud. Like, not for anything, but what have they done? Like, what was the point of bringing back John Morrison? What was the point? Because to me, sure, him and Miz have great chemistry. They're funny. You know, they're good heels, the whole nine yards. But you brought him back to be the Miz's sidekick because at this point, those two guys aren't even wrestling. They're just coming out, bringing on a host, a guest that they have no like relation to, and just promote another program. Like they did it with Jeff Hardy last week. He came out and then they just inserted themselves into the feud with him and Sheamus and basically gave Jeff Hardy a platform to promote his upcoming bar fight with Sheamus. And then you see the Fatal 4-Way match for the Intercontinental Championship, and those two guys aren't in it? Like, are you kidding me? Especially after The Miz spent, 3 years of his career, you know, screaming about and cutting that A-plus promo on Talking Smack. Yeah, exactly. About how much that title means to him and this, that, and the other thing. But now he can't even be in a number one contenders match to it. Like, maybe it's turning AJ Styles babyface again. Like, I know he just turned heel last summer, and he's a damn good heel. But he's one of those rare breed guys that I feel like he could be an equally as good babyface as heel. And maybe that's what SmackDown needs, because we sure as hell know there's way more dancing partners for babyfaces nowadays than heels. Like, he could have a program with The Miz or Sheamus or John Morrison, Baron Corbin. So maybe that's the answer. Maybe AJ has to go back to babyface just out of sure need. In regards to that, you know, because after Braun Strowman and I guess Jeff Hardy, there really aren't a lot of baby faces on the SmackDown roster, as we just alluded to when talking about Big E. But you just have so many guys that could have been in that match that are just better wrestlers. And I don't mean from an in-ring perspective, but I mean like the whole, you know, the whole package, more deserving. Like, you could have had the Sheamus versus Jeff Hardy match or bar fight be for the number one contendership of the Intercontinental Championship. Just something to segue it, some congruity, make it a legitimate, you know, like make me actually take the match seriously. Like the Intercontinental Championship match next week, like, okay, it's a championship match. And I guess they're doing it to spike the viewers that is just, or the ratings that is plummeting as of late. But is it really? Like, are people really going to be like, oh, well, it's a championship match, but it's, I forget his name now, but Grand Metalik. I don't know. For me, it just seems like a way to get, like, a cheap spike in ratings or in viewership. just, I don't know, I can't get behind it. It bothers me a bit because you're devaluing the championship. Like, I don't like the fact that AJ Styles was the one on his back at the end, how Grand Metal Elite got the one up on him. I found that really stupid. Like, if you want to have the match, that's fine and all this, but at the end of the day, there cannot be a chance or a point in the match where you even think there's a chance that Grand Metal Elite can come out with a win here. So I didn't like that AJ Styles was put on his back there and he went away with a tail tuck between his legs. And I know that heels have to, you know, look kind of snakeish or cowardly, but maybe he just comes in and kicks him in the balls and then runs away. But AJ Styles, he couldn't have ended up on his back the way he did on SmackDown. So while I like the match and all, I just don't really like the whole story behind it.
Well, if you don't like that story behind that, and then next week we have Otis and Mandy Rose come returning, I guess, after their just month-long hiatus of, I don't know, whatever they're doing, of sitting around a pool while we somehow get an introspective view of Mandy Rose's fantasies of Otis. I mean, I hope, you know, thank God they're coming back because, I mean, you know, ratings have been absolutely in the toilet. But, you know, I don't really have much more to say about this. I know Grand Metal Elite, I was looking back, and he did have many singles matches throughout his Cruiserweight Classic and then on 205 Live. But again, on SmackDown, he hasn't been doing a whole lot, and he's been shoved into a group of Lucha House Party that has done really nothing. Let's be honest, they've done absolutely nothing on the main roster, and so it is a little bit head-scratching that a guy that, when you look at his win-loss record, is probably under 500. I mean, it's doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Same with Lince Dorado. I understand Drew Gulak. He's really a technician, a masterful technician, but this is very head-scratching, and it's really not. When you think about it, though, you could make the case, oh, well, this is for spiking ratings. But, I mean, is it really? Because I don't think, you know, the Grand Metal Elite is a needle mover in terms of ratings. I mean, AJ Styles is, and maybe that's the hook that they would say, oh, well, AJ Styles in a championship match. That's the needle mover. But I mean, when someone goes, hey, who's he facing? Grand Metal Elite, who? Right? People might be turned off by that. So I don't even know if you can make that case that it's really a ratings mover, because I don't think it's going to really result in a big spike. It's just something to kind of garner interest for those that are still around, not to necessarily bring people back, which is kind of a sad thing to say. But okay, a little pressed for time here, but I want to jump to the Raw side because there's a lot happening here. Randy Orton in a absolutely, just like you said, I thought at first when this whole thing started that this was one of the biggest runs of his career. I have now decided, as you have, this is the single best run Randy Orton has had at his entire career. And Randy Orton has had an amazing career, from Evolution to Legacy to his run as champion to his programs with John Cena and Christian. He's had many great matches with Christian, to kind of being in obscurity on SmackDown, to facing Bray Wyatt. I mean, the whole nine yards, facing Triple H at WrestleMania, all that. This, to me, is the single best run, because Randy Orton, at this point in his career, gets it. Randy Orton, at this point in his career, understands what it means to be a real heel, to be truly hated and embrace that hate. That Randy Orton is brilliant on the mic. He's been brilliant in the ring. I have to give WWE credit where it's due, creative credit where it's due. They have clearly understood what's happening here. Randy Orton going back to his roots of being a legend killer and really doing exactly that, taking out Big Show, taking out Christian, taking out Edge. All of this has been awesome, and what's even greater is creative, to me, is the backbone of this, because they have not allowed anybody to really get any kind of revenge on Orton. Orton just continues to run roughshod, continues to punt people. This past week, he punted the Big Show, as we all saw coming, but Big Show, to his credit, also cut a really good promo. And I really enjoyed it more than I thought I would with this whole program, mini program with Show and Orton. But they have continued to build heat and build heat and build heat. And I said this before, nobody has pinned Randy Orton or made him submit inside a wrestling ring in, what, 6 months? I mean, yeah, he lost at WrestleMania on top of a truck with a concerto. I get it. But that, to me, it counted, but not really. Like, to me, the in-ring stuff is what matters most. And Randy Orton has not lost a match inside a ring I mean, I have to look it up. It's been that long, but that's what makes it brilliant, is that nobody's been able to get to Randy Orton. Randy Orton's been a step ahead. He's been cutting promos that are just, you really hate the character. Like, I hate Randy Orton right now. I feel like I'm a kid again. Like, that's how good Randy Orton has been. And I cannot give it a bigger compliment than that. Like, it's like I believe in Santa again. It's great. Randy Orton makes me believe. I'm looking forward to where this is going. Maybe he faces Christian at SummerSlam. And ends up, you know, ending the career again of Christian. I'm not sure, but this all leads to Edge returning, and the rumor has it that it's an I Quit match for Edge versus Orton at WrestleMania 37. We'll see how that pans out. But I mean, it makes me want to see Edge again, and it really just, if I could stand up and applaud this whole storyline, I mean, I would, but this is awesome. What do you think?
Yeah, he's killing it right now. It's kind of like he's put all characters together that he's had, like the Apex Predator, the Viper, the Legend Killer, which he's going by now again. It's like a bit of each of like parts of every character that he's just all assembled into one, and then you just have like this super level version of Randy Orton. And he's punting people. He has the sadistic side like he was when he was with the Legacy and with the feud with the McMahons. He has the arrogance from when he was the Legend Killer, but he has the precision of like the Apex Predator in his most like recent years. You know, and all I could say is that obviously it's going to circle back to Edge at some point. But in the meantime, you know, I know Drew is caught up again with Dolph Ziggler in the short term, but to be quite honest, I'm really hoping that Randy Orton gets the WWE Championship run here. Like, I think he would be the best guy to take it off Drew. And, you know, maybe Drew gets it back further down the line here. It doesn't have to be a long run, but considering the elite level that Randy Orton is on right now, I think that it would be a crime if they didn't give him one last run with the WWE Championship.
There's nobody hotter. I mean, I don't see, you're absolutely right. Like, I don't know how WWE does not go, why don't we put the belt on this guy, right? Let's make him nuclear heat. Like, right, Randy Orton's got the hot, I mean, he is the hottest heel in the company. I mean, bar none. Bray Wyatt doesn't count, right? Like, nobody counts right now. Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro don't count. This guy is what makes a heel great. He understands everything. Like you said, he's brought in all of his characters and has fine-tuned them and polished them into a way that just he understands. He's like a surgeon. And he has that precision of understanding what he needs to say and do to really, really be hated. And he has gotten it. And putting the championship on him would make it, he would be such a heat magnet. I'm fine with, you know what, like, I love Drew as champion. You love Drew as champion. Many people love Drew as champion. But if anybody was going to take it off of him, I think Randy Orton would be the guy, should be the guy, and I hope is the guy in the near future to take it off of him. Because if fans feel like they missed out on being able to celebrate with Drew, they'll celebrate even harder when he regains it, maybe from Randy Orton or somebody else at that point. You can make up as best you can for that lost opportunity, that lost moment, by having him regain it with the fans whenever that happens, maybe early next year, hopefully, or maybe the end of this year if there's a miracle, right? So that's how you make up for that moment. And the fans will be angry. You know, he just won at WrestleMania. Well, you're not in attendance, right? Like, you can sit at home and be angry, but if you're there live, that's a different experience. So I hope Randy Orton ends up facing Drew McIntyre. Maybe he is facing Drew McIntyre at SummerSlam, and Randy Orton is still unbeaten going in and takes that title off of Drew McIntyre and is champion. It would be one of the best heel runs as champion that I can remember. I mean, dating back to me, Triple H was probably the best heel champion I've ever seen in the modern era. It would be akin to that. Like, I would love to see it, because I would love to hate that character every week.
Dan, I feel like we've kind of been robbed with Randy Orton the last 4 or 5 years, because I know he had the WWE Championship win against Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania 33, but I found that the payoff for that feud was absolutely terrible in regards to the way they built it and the length they did. And then just to lose it, what, a month and a bit later to Jinder Mahal for arguably the worst WWE Championship reign of all time, that was just a damn shame. Like, he wins the title at Backlash after winning the Rumble and then drops it to Jinder Mahal. Or no, he won the belt at Mania and then dropped it at Backlash to Jinder Mahal. So I found that we were robbed of that. And after that, we haven't seen him have, and I don't really even count that run as champ. So his last legitimate run as WWE champion was in late 2013, 2014, when he lost it to Daniel Bryan in the main event of WrestleMania 30. And that's when he was the undisputed champion with WWE Championship and the World Heavyweight. And after that, like, he's kind of just been lingering around the upper mid-card, often as a babyface, which he's good now. Like, he's okay as a babyface because he's such a legacy star, and whenever he hits the RKO, people will pop. But, like, you know, it never really worked. And he was on SmackDown for a while. He had that feud with Jeff Hardy that culminated in the Hell in a Cell match, which was okay. He had a run as the U.S. champion. But this is, like, the first time since that Bray Wyatt feud in 2017, which, like I just said, felt awfully flat for me, that he's been in a really meaningful program. And it warrants him getting another world championship reign. And given the fact of how uneventful his last reign was, and before that, it's been 6 years since he's been WWE champ, I think it would just be an absolute crime against the program and the work that Creative and Randy Orton has done to not give him one last run as the champ. And I don't know how many times he's been world champion, like combining his reign as WWE and world heavyweight champion, but I'm sure it's hovering around 10, and I think that he's more than due for one last run.
If they don't do it now, then when? I mean, like, this is something that is, it's hard to say, but I think it's more important than Drew McIntyre as champion right now. Drew McIntyre is now a made man. He's held the belt for several months now. He's beaten Brock Lesnar. I'm fine with Randy Orton at the sacrifice of that, because Drew can easily build himself back. It's not like it's going to do significant damage to Drew. I really believe that because of how hot Randy Orton is. And that program, the promos would be amazing. They could have a 3-month-plus program between the two, building up to Edge's return, maybe at the Rumble or sooner. Who knows? But that, to me, yes, Randy Orton, we have not seen this version of Randy Orton in many years. A motivated Randy Orton. Randy Orton that actually cares about going to work. Like, that's how I feel. That's how Edge brought up in his promo, because it's true. Randy Orton has been coasting, like, with cruise control on for many years, and he's so good that he can do it. And he's so good that you don't even know he's doing it. But now we've seen that what an awoken, you know, really aware and motivated Randy Orton can do and be. And this is what I wish we had his entire career, because it's been widely believed that Randy Orton has been one of the most underwhelming and underachieving guys, as successful as he's been, of his entire career. And I felt that way for many years about Randy Orton. And it's great to see him doing this, and I love it. But it's also at the same time kind of disappointing that only now we're getting to see this, because of what he maybe could have been over those like 5, 6, 7, 8 years where he was just kind of almost going through the motions. But I am absolutely loving this. So just a few more minutes here. Any closing thoughts on Randy Orton before we go on to just a couple other things?
No, I think we pretty much covered it, just how awesome he's been.
Yeah, no, he is. And I hope that WWE Championship is around his or over his shoulder at SummerSlam. I really do. I love Drew, and I hate to say this because we all wanted Drew as champion forever, but Drew will be champion again, and right now it's about just scalding hot Randy Orton. So, okay. I guess a couple other things. MVP is United States champion. Is it weird to you that Bobby Lashley's not champion and his manager of sorts is the United States champion? Like, how do you feel about this?
It's kind of bizarre, because I thought that the whole point of putting them together was to push Bobby Lashley and give him a legitimate mouthpiece, which MVP is. But I mean, at this point, MVP's the one garnering all the heat. He's the one driving all the storylines. Bobby Lashley's just standing there. So maybe they're just going in a direction that's going to be centered around MVP, with Bobby Lashley as the heavy. Like, you know, we last time I was on, we were like seeing the praises of Bobby Lashley and kind of talking the same way like we're talking about Randy Orton right now. Like, you know, if you're going to pull the trigger with Bobby Lashley, no better time than now. If there's a guy to take the belt off of Drew, Bobby Lashley's as good as anyone. But we've quickly forgot about that run and that feud he had with Drew in June. And now it's all centered around MVP. And, you know, I'm very pleasantly surprised with how they've built MVP since he's come back. You know, I'm not really sure what they're doing with him as the United States champion, what the end game is here, because, you know, obviously, you know, he's far past his prime. And, you know, Bobby Lashley is the more promising star in terms of the future. But at the same time, maybe they just don't feel like Bobby Lashley has the charisma to legitimately be, you know, a singles champion. And you know what? Maybe it's just because MVP is just so damn good on the mic right now, but I'm enjoying it.
No, I'm with you. And you know what? MVP, he is the one garnering the heat. I'm with you. It just kind of felt like MVP slid into that managerial role so seamlessly and so effortlessly, and just was such an asset to Bobby Lashley that it was just a perfect fit. The chemistry was there. That it was weird that, like, a manager of sorts, I know he's an active competitor, but I kind of wrote him off like that in my head and just was like, wow, this guy's going to be a great manager. And now the manager is champion. I'm torn because, again, MVP is great, and we're seeing how good he could be and how good he is. But it feels like my instincts are like, but it should be about Bobby Lashley. Like, yes, keep them together, but he should have the championship around Bobby Lashley's waist. And it just feels a little backwards. I like the group. I like this duo. They're great. Do not break them up. It's just the championship feels like it's around the wrong waist in a way. And maybe I don't know what it is about WWE that they sour on Bobby Lashley every chance they get. I was hoping that I wouldn't be saying this, you know, a month after their program, that Bobby Lashley's kind of become irrelevant, but in a way he kind of has. He's become a sidekick to his sidekick. It's not good. And I hope that this is rectified in the coming weeks and we see some kind of turnaround as Bobby Lashley heads towards SummerSlam. I don't know what the plan is for Bobby Lashley heading towards SummerSlam. I hope it is something of significance. Maybe it is. If it's not Randy Orton against Drew, maybe it's a Lashley versus Drew McIntyre, maybe versus Lesnar, who has not shown his face, and I don't know, maybe he won't at all. But again, in the interest of time, other thing, Bayley and Sasha Banks, what do you think of them holding all the gold?
Well, you could make the argument that there's nothing better right now in WWE than Bayley and Sasha Banks. Those two are on fire, specifically Bayley. You know, if I had to pinpoint one of them, it's all Bayley. Like, she's just owning her character. She's so arrogant. I said it the last time I was on. She took the charisma and the energy of the babyface character, but then completely translated it into a heel version. And I like that a lot because I felt that when she first went heel, it may have grown stale really fast because it was more just doom and gloom, depressed type. But no, she's brought over the energy and the character. And, you know, I feel like Sasha Banks has been a beneficiary of that, being sidekick to her. And I know they're supposed to be, you know, displayed on equal footing, but I think we could both agree Bayley is the star. She is better than Sasha. She's higher than Sasha right now. And you know what? I think that Asuka will eventually take the title back this coming Monday night. But even Sasha, I got to give her credit. She's really owning her heel character right now. And, you know, there's just not enough good things you could say about them, but specifically it's Bayley. You could make the argument that she's best out of any person on the women or men's rosters right now.
There isn't. They are the Randy Orton equivalent on the women's side right now. I don't think anyone expected them to be this hot for this long. And I don't want to see them get torn apart anytime soon. I mean, this is one of those, and I've brought this up before, this is one of those programs that you don't pay off until you're back in front of fans, at least in a reasonable amount of time. I mean, if this COVID thing lasts another year or, you know, even 6 to 8 months, it's going to be hard to string it out that long. But string it out as long as you possibly can until you're back in front of fans. So if I was creative, that would be my goal. So I would maybe tease it here and there, like every few weeks or every month, like you have a little bit of a teaser where one of them volunteers the other for a match, or one of them gives the other one a weird look, or, you know, one of those types of like teasers, like, hey, yeah, we're headed there, but I'm not telling you when it's going to happen. That's fine. But I do not want the actual split or payoff, if possible. Again, we all don't know what's going to happen with COVID, but if they're in front of fans, that to me is where the payoff should happen. That's why I'm expecting a very subpar WWE product right now. They're doing the best they can, but at the same time, I don't want big angles and big programs if they can help it, because assumingly we're back in front of fans. That's what gives pro wrestling its soul back, and I want big angles, big returns, big things to happen in front of fans instead of just the, you know, 15 drones that WWE has out there in the WWE NXT trainees. So that to me is great. But yes, Bayley and Sasha are absolutely killing it. I love that they have all the gold. That is it's a great thing. Seeing them on my TV every time that there's a program, I have no problem with that. I'm really not getting sick of them yet. It'll happen, but I'm loving it as we stand right now. And yes, Asuka could indeed take the belt back from Sasha, who is, I guess, not clearly the rightful owner of it anyway. I think that's how we will start to see this duo crumble, is one championship drops, then the next one, and then the final one, and then the split. So this could be a very strung out breakup, and as it should be, as I said, but I think Sasha will be the first one to drop the belt. That SmackDown Women's Championship around the shoulders or waist of Bayley is what, going on 290 days or something like that, 290 plus. She has added so much value to that belt, and that's the unsung hero here, is that championship belt being added so much value to it because of Bayley's success and Sasha's success. But also, I think that's the last belt that should go. They should lose the Raw Women's Championship first, then they lose the Tag Team Championship, and then maybe they lose, or well, maybe even the SmackDown Women's Championship. It's kind of hard because they can't be on the same show if they're not tag team champions going show to show. So I'm not sure how they exactly do this. How would you break it down eventually to this inevitable breakup?
Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do. I would assume it's going to build to WrestleMania next year. But again, like you said, a lot is going to depend on when the fans get back in the arena. But I know we're pressed for time here, so I got to get this in before we close it out. But I just want to get your thoughts on the bar fight between Sheamus and Jeff Hardy. And as it being a cinematic production of WWE, how did you find it compared to the Swamp match?
So I found it at least a little more realistic. I've, like I said, if you've listened to me, my listeners know, I've pretty much waved the white flag in terms of just hating on the cinematic version of wrestling, because it's here to stay. And do I prefer the normal version of pro wrestling in a normal, you know, real world? Yeah, of course I do. But if I'm going to, you know, transplant my brain into cinematic versions of wrestling or a movie version of wrestling, then I will look at it through that lens. Otherwise, I will just dislike all of these things, and I don't want to. But in comparison to the Swamp fight, again, there were elements of the Swamp fight I liked that were missing from the bar fight. Again, two different elements, two different programs, and the bar fight wasn't as long as the Swamp fight was. But the Swamp fight with Jeff Hardy and Sheamus, obviously, I didn't like it as much as the Swamp fight. And the reason is, what the hell is... They sit down. Jeff Hardy walks in the bar, and he starts talking about, I'm the window, I'm the light, like I'm connected to everything. What the hell is he talking about? Like, what does that even have to do with anything? Like, that was just bizarre. I mean, I didn't understand that at all. It wasn't funny. It didn't make me connected to him. Jeff Hardy having his face shoved in a urinal was gross. Like, I felt kind of cringeworthy on that. Even if they cleaned it prior, I mean, it's been used before. I mean, Jeff Hardy coming out on top, I'm starting to not care about this program because it's uncomfortable if you're watching it and you're a person that is struggling with alcohol, of which many people are, and they're bringing this to light in a bar, of which somebody is a recovering alcoholic and has had previous problems with drugs and alcohol. I think you and I have spoken about this. It's just uncomfortable. It's a very ballsy storyline for WWE to roll out in this timing of people who are at home or maybe lost their jobs or maybe people who already have problems existing that go to wrestling and sports to escape from things, and then they are brought, you know, this it's in a fantasy environment, but it's very uncomfortable. Hopefully this is the end of it. It was what it was. The Swamp fight, I know that you actually enjoyed more than most, so I guess give me your thoughts on both.
Okay, well, for the Swamp fight, I guess the thing with the Swamp fight, why I enjoyed it more than I thought I would, is A, I went in expecting for it to be what it was. Like, it wasn't like the Firefly Funhouse where I was just so caught off guard and just detested it from beginning to end. The Swamp Fight, like, look, there were aspects to it where, like, I actually blurted out, like, oh, for God's sakes, are you kidding me? Like, when Braun Strowman got hit in the back in the shovel by himself, like, that to me was just incredibly just idiotic. And I really don't like that, or the random henchmen just running after him. We have no idea who these guys are, getting set on fire, all that. But I really liked the build to the Swamp Fight. I really thought WWE did a good job playing on past storylines, playing on past programs between Bray and Braun, that they actually do have a history together. So I liked the build a lot. And also with Bray Wyatt, I kind of take his character the same way I took The Undertaker, in the sense that I'm not a guy who likes, you know, the hocus pocus type of magical thunderbolts and stuff. But with The Undertaker, I let it go because it was The Undertaker. And Bray Wyatt, it's kind of the same feeling. I like him so much. I like him as an actor so much. I like the way that he fights in the ring. The fact that he's pretty much juggling three characters right now. And I found the promo he cut on the Firefly Funhouse on SmackDown excellent. You know, talking to the old character of himself. Like, okay, well, you had your time now to go away. So because of all that, I enjoyed it. I liked the way it ended, that The Fiend came out, because I was starting kind of to fear that The Fiend wasn't going to come back. So I liked it for that. Obviously, there was aspects to it that it was just way too hokey. The fact that the swamp to me literally looked like a swimming pool that they artificially turned into a swamp, that as well. So aside from that, I thought that it did its job just based on the psychology behind the match and the booking towards it. For the bar fight, I kind of echo your points. I found that Jeff Hardy kind of sounded incoherent when he came in, which is kind of ironic given the fact that he was supposed to be a recovering alcoholic. But when he was saying that he's the light and the bar and this and that, he kind of sounded like someone who was on drugs. I didn't mind it. I found that it was a realistic fight. And, you know, they did this in the past, like the grocery fight match with Booker and Steve Austin. So I wasn't too much against that. The only part of the match was the end, because I said you did this whole thing having, besides the background music, it was a pretty realistic fight. They made it look like a realistic bar fight. But then when Sheamus takes the hat off Jeff Hardy's face, and the makeup's on, and he has the contacts in, and then he has like a Hulkamania Hulk up, and Sheamus can't do anything in terms of offense anymore. It kind of lost it for me. And then after he gets the pin, he closes his eyes, he reopens them, and the contacts are gone. It's just like, okay, so now we're back into this magical land where he's transforming into another character. And a side note, since when does Jeff Hardy have an alter ego? I didn't even know that was a thing. So besides the ending where he just transformed into an alter ego that I didn't know he had, I enjoyed it for the most part.
That was the number one thing too for me. Besides the inserted punching and kicking sound effects and that kind of thing, and Jeff Hardy just making no sense. Totally agree. Like, I'm thinking, you know, Jeff Hardy doesn't have superpowers. Like, when did this become a thing for Jeff? And I don't think that WWE cares, because it was good for TV. It's good for production. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that when did this happen for Jeff? It makes no sense that he just suddenly has face paint on. And like you said, he just became invincible. It was like I was playing a video game. That didn't make sense to me. And Sheamus is the guy to me that WWE has more of a future with than Jeff Hardy does. So I'm very interested to see where these two go from here. Maybe it is a final match at SummerSlam. I don't know. And based on how much time we have left and how things ended, and that I think they're, what, 1-1 apiece now, you could have the rubber match at SummerSlam. That's the argument. So I wouldn't be surprised to see this go one more match. But, you know, the whole old story here, that this constant, you're just a junkie. And this whole thing, like, it's okay. Like, we get it. Can we move on, like, from this? Like, he's trying to be this awful person of getting Jeff Hardy to go back to his drugs, and that you're just going to go, you know, you're going to be a failure. You're a failure to your family, all these things. And I don't know. Like, I have a very strong suspicion that it's not done yet, and it will be done at SummerSlam. But, all right. Well, yeah, we kind of are a little bit out of time here. So, but It's been great having you back on the show. I've certainly enjoyed it. And any shout outs or any Instagram or social media that you want to share?
You can follow me at ADeMarco25 on Twitter, and I believe it's the same thing on Instagram, although I'm not as in touch with that platform as I am with Twitter.
Well, that's the only platform I've got left. So, that's definitely follow. He's a good follow. From what I remember, you know, I've been off Twitter now for 2.5 months. But I keep filing appeals. You know, eventually I'll get somebody at Twitter that just goes, ah, this guy's persistent. Let's give him his account back. So that's my hope. So we'll see. But Anthony, thanks a lot for coming on, and we'll definitely do this again soon.
Sounds good, man. Talk soon.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show, or head to WWEPodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to patreon.com/WWE podcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.